Sports Talk Radio for the Brainerd Lakes. 1380 KLIZ AM. Brainerd Baxter, the fan.
It's time for Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ, the fan. Featuring Colin McDonald and Chris Foley. Today's broadcast is sponsored by Craigan's Legacy Courses, Tito's Handmade Vodka, Rutgers Bay Lake Lodge, The Tea Hive, The Holiday Station on Mill Avenue, and Maury's Market. Streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com, sponsored by Mills GM. And now, here's Chris Foley and Colin McDonald for Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons, 1380 KLIZ, The Fan, streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com. Colin McDonald with you, Chris Foley as well, of course, and available now at Podcast One as well. Want to remind everybody that streaming is brought your way by Mills GM and Mills Ford this month. Thanks to them for that. Chris, another major this week with the change in schedule this year. This is the one that might be hardest to kind of get a hold of right away. The tour always stretched out into kind of mid-August with the Open Championship, but right now it's we're heading into it, the last major of the year.
Yes, and I always go back and forth, but my favorite major of the year, either this or the Masters, but I love the Open Championship, and I love waking up early at 2-3 in the morning and watching for 3 or 4 hours before I go to work, and it's always exciting because it's such a different venue than what we normally see.
With your career in the golf world, this tournament's one of the only ones that's kind of built for you to watch because you're out there working the time that all the guys are playing every week.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of times you'll say, I haven't had a chance to watch a replay of this or that because you've been on the golf course
exactly.
The whole time the other guys are on the golf course. So shifts to Ireland, which is kind of cool. Royal Portrush, it's called, and required a little reconfiguration, as you might guess, to stage the Open. First time in 68 years.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. So they will host it. I think 1951 was the last time they hosted it.
That's correct.
And he was kind of a flamboyant. I'll never think of his name. Oh, yes, I will, because I have it here. First time the Open was held there was 1951, and the winner was Max Faulkner. And he was a flamboyant character who dressed in brightly colored clothes in an era when golfing attire was much more somber.
Yes. And, you know, if you go back and look at Max Faulkner's swing, you can get some video on YouTube, very reminiscent of recent tour winner Matthew Wolff.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, very reminiscent.
You wonder, now with the Open Championship, a lot of young guys in recent weeks in particular, Nate Lashley we talked about, not really that young, but a new winner. Gary Woodland, of course, won the U.S. Open. Rory McIlroy is a fairly recent winner. Patrick Cantlay, Kevin Na. Brooks Koepka won the PGA Championship and always seems to be a threat. And Brooks Koepka's caddy's home course is Royal Portrush in Ireland, which
right.
might be a huge advantage.
Yeah, it definitely some local knowledge there, and Portrush is it's really pretty straightforward. Most links golf, if you play the old course, you have to play the old course at St. Andrews a lot to learn the right lines, and so a caddy there can definitely be a huge advantage to teach you where to place your tee shots and that type of thing. Portrush would be more straightforward than St. Andrews, but having that local knowledge never hurts.
Yeah, and Rory's very excited because I was reading he feels like it might be a once in a lifetime opportunity. It doesn't go to Ireland very often, so he's pretty excited to represent his homeland and hopes to put on a good performance, obviously.
Well, it's definitely a home game for Rory, and played Portrush many, many times. If you go to the RNA website, there's some fantastic videos of Rory talking about the golf course and playing some of the holes. But I just hope for Rory that he's not too – doesn't put too much pressure on himself to perform. But he is due to play well in a major here. He's – you know, he's had a couple down years, and I think he's poised and ready to go. He's taken some time off and has prepared hard for this one.
He just hasn't rolled in a whole lot of putts in recent tournaments. He's playing pretty well, but boy, when he gets dialed, he's like, well, any of these guys. You were talking about the 80-20 last week as far as winning all your money,
right.
20% of the tournaments. And when they get dialed, of course, they are beyond belief how good they are. And Tiger, always the topic of conversation in every tournament he plays in. He hasn't played in a month now competitively. I'm sure he practices as hard as anybody ever, but does he need that competitive round within a week or two of playing the Open Championship?
Boy, it will be interesting because it's a different. Tiger's took a different approach this year because of his health and his body to how he's prepared for tournaments, and going into the Masters, he played 4 out of 5 weeks, but since the Masters, he's only played 3 events, I think. So we'll see. I mean, Tiger's had great success in links golf. So Tiger's always a threat no matter where he plays.
Yeah, he's never played the week before the Open Championship, which I didn't know until of course all that information comes out prior to. But he's never played the week before, so maybe it won't bother him at all.
Yeah. No, generally his typical routine was he would go over the week before, not playing. They always tried to get him playing the Scottish Open, which is the week before, which is at the same time as the John Deere Classic. And he's never played in that, but traditionally he's played a bunch of links golf, gone over and went with some of his friends like Mark O'Meara, and they played their way kind of through Scotland and Ireland, and that's how Tom Watson used to prepare for the Open Championship.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not sure if he's done that this week or not.
We don't live in a great bump-and-run country for the game of golf, but that bump-and-run game, I kind of came a little bit out of my background on the drier, hard courses in Montana that I played, but bump-and-run... It's kind of a fun game to play, really.
Yeah, no question. And at the pro level of the game, they flight the ball so well and they hit it in the air, and it's not as much as it used to be. Even though the course conditions call for that type of play, the players are still carrying it in the air for the most part, unless you get a extremely baked out golf course like we saw a couple years ago at Carnoustie, where you had to. You couldn't necessarily land it on the greens. You were landing it 20, 30, 40 yards short and bouncing it up. And
yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what the conditions are at Portrush. Normally, the golf courses in Ireland are not nearly as firm and fast as they are in Scotland because they get so much more rain in Ireland than they do in Scotland.
We'll be a couple days in when the show airs on Saturday morning, so we'll both look bad or good here. Who do you like?
Well, that's a good question. I'd like to see Tiger play well. I think Brooks Koepka is going to make another run once again. Rory McIlroy is. I'd love to see Rory win. I think we're going to see a very good tournament from Jordan Spieth, and I think he's going to be in contention. He's struggled on the weekend this year. He's taken several weeks off, 3 or 4 weeks off now, and I think he probably has a lot of things worked out.
Yeah, yeah. He thinks his way around a golf course quite well, and it always seems like the Open Championship takes a lot of thinking your way around out
Absolutely.
There. Yeah, different shots every hole, really.
Yep.
I like maybe Francisco Molinari, too. Yep. He even though he's defending champ, he's got a lot of game. He's added some distance off the tee, and it hasn't really affected his accuracy too much. So, of course, that's what's happening in the world of golf.
I worry about Francisco, what his Masters loss did to him.
Right, yeah.
Didn't show up very well at the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. He's a former champion, Open champion. So we'll see what happens there.
And my old buddy Phil is looking 49 years old here the second half of the season. Well, he started out looked like it was going to be a great year for him. He won at Pebble, and it was finished up quite high early in several tournaments, and since then has had trouble making cuts. So,
well, I think Phil had a lot of build up to the U.S. Open. I think he felt it was his last chance with his history at Pebble Beach, and maybe some letdown after not playing quite as well.
Talk to him about the plane of his swing. What'd you call it? All right. Looks like we'll get another good show going for British Open week. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons, 1380 KLIZ, streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Mills GM and Mills Ford, for that. Also available at Podcast One. We thought with this being British Open week, we would replay an interview that Chris had with Bill Rogers. Bill was the 1981 British Open champion, and he had the opportunity to sit down with Bill at Augusta a couple of years back and share some memories of his great career playing through the Nicklaus, Trevino, Watson, Crenshaw era, and also talks a little bit about Mr. Palmer, as the players called him. So here's that interview, Chris Foley and Bill Rogers.
I want to welcome to the show a good friend and one of the great gentlemen in the game, 1981 British Open champion Bill Rogers.
A lot of years to look back, but yeah, 1981.
Bill, I appreciate you coming on the show. Six tour wins, correct?
Right,
including
yeah.
the British Open, and member of the Walker Cup team and the 81 Ryder Cup team.
Yeah.
We just finished day one of the Masters, and tell me some of your thoughts on today.
Well, it was quite a day. I frankly can't believe the scoring. It was a tough day. I'll tell you, these guys, it really kind of takes me back down memory lane, actually, and thinking about, you know, you face tough conditions a lot playing the tour, and you know, just trying to crawl in some of their minds out there watching, you know, these young kids, and you know, but that's all they do, that's what they do, and they're not out there worried about the, you know, the cold, the wind. They're just game on, and the scoring in as tough a conditions as I think any of them would admit they've ever played in at Augusta, certainly. The scoring was remarkable, and this Charlie Hoffman score just doesn't even make any sense. I'm telling you, my absolute bet was that 70 would be low today, and he shoots 65.
Yeah, that score today had to be like shooting 60 on any normal day.
Well, I think so.
Yeah. You know, I remember last year when it was so windy, and you and I were talking, and talking about putting when it's so windy on these greens. To touch on that for me, Bill.
I think that would be the maybe the thing that people would think is just still, you know, it's not that much affected, but it's as tough to putt in windy conditions like that as it is to hit good golf shots. And, you know, getting stable and balanced and catching putts solidly, especially with these things as frightening fast as they are, it's a real test. It's a real test of patience. And you really have to draw up an extra bit of focus, I believe, Chris, when you play in the tough conditions.
It's got to be hitting a straight, you know, if you have a flat putt and you've got a crosswind, it's got to be very difficult to be able to, one, know where to aim it, and then secondly, allow yourself to aim it in that spot.
Exactly, because there was enough wind to move balls, certainly. Yeah.
Bill, what was the last Masters you played in?
1986.
Yeah. And how much has the course changed from then, or how much harder is it today than?
A lot. You know, and not just from the yardage tacked on, but they've added trees, real strategically placed trees that pinch off. 17 comes to mind first and foremost. I mean, you've got to really fit it in
yeah,
pretty close to the center of the fairway to still play a normal shot into a difficult green. But you know, overall, the length and some of we had no rough when I played. There was no rough at Augusta National, which one thing, the ball would always roll out into the pine straw, which,
sure,
you know, was kind of, it wasn't exactly penalty, but it made it a little more interesting playing shots out of pine straw. So anyway, lots of things make the golf course more difficult.
You played in really the greatest era in golf with Nicklaus and Palmer and Trevino and Ben Crenshaw, and you kind of spanned a couple of great generations of golfers. And today there was a lot of reflection on Arnold Palmer. Do you have any good Arnold Palmer stories you can share? Some special memories of the King?
Well, that's dangerous to ask a Texan to tell a story, but. I do have great memories of him. The fact that we're even speaking and doing this your radio show is testament to what Arnold Palmer did for us in the game. And, you know, he afforded me, as many, many other golf professionals, a chance to make a living at this game and impacted us. He was a gentleman. He was a kind of a pioneer. He wasn't afraid, played without fear, and played. He was everybody's favorite, and players as well. So, I just remember the time he was playing the Masters leading at 15, and Dave Marr was playing with him, my Ryder Cup captain. Dave was defending PGA champion. They were playing the 15th hole. Arnold had a one-shot lead, and he was Dave was right up by his golf bag, and Arnold was deciding whether he was going to try to hit it over the water. And finally, he pulls the head cover off and real dramatically, and the fans went crazy that he was going to go for it. And sure enough, he takes a mighty whack, you know, and the club coming over his head, and he takes his big divot out with the 3-wood. And it's late in the day, so there was a glare, and he couldn't see the ball land. And he looks at Dave Marr, who was right there, and says, "Davey, did it get over?" He said, "Hell, Arnold, your divot made it over." he was dynamic and swashbuckling or whatever, and played the game at full tilt.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ. The Fan, streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Mills GM. We'll be back with more of Chris's conversation with 1981 British Open champion Bill Rogers right after this.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ, streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Mills GM. We continue now with Chris's conversation with 1981 British Open champion Bill Rogers.
Who are some of your favorite players to play with, Bill?
Well, like you said, I do admit and or would agree with you, the greatest time to play golf, I think, when from Palmer and Nicklaus to, you know, Trevino, Floyd, Miller, Irwin. Actually, those were members on my Ryder Cup team in 81, yeah. As well as Crenshaw, Litsky, Jerry Pate, Larry Nelson. Wow. Tom Kite.
What a team.
Yeah, well, I wasn't too picky. It was just such a privilege. I didn't always look at it this way, a privilege to play the tour. And it didn't bother me too much kind of who I played. I was very motivated to be successful because I wanted to play with all the great players. That was my primary motivation. And then it became a little bit more earning a living and, providing. Yeah. But love playing with the best players. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. One of the things I always love spending time with you because you're so passionate about the game today and still such a fan of the game. Yeah. And it's that's so much fun to hear the stories. And, kind of talking about who are your mentors in the game?
Well, I don't know. I was brought up in the game with my family. My dad and brother were good players, but an old East Texas golf professional in Jerry Robinson really saw some talent and some hope in my golf game, and he kind of brought me along, taught me how to play, taught me how to compete, and he would be coach, mentor, golf professional. Kind of almost like a second father figure, but he saw me through and he kind of understood me better than I knew me and knew the steps to get me to, you know, to move me toward choices that I'd have to make competitively. I mean, am I going to pay the price to be good? And then am I going to continue to pay the price to be great? You know, those type things. And you need some you need some outside kind of counsel when you're sure. faced with those kind of decisions.
You know, and so you played in a fantastic era, and it seems like we're coming into another great era of golf. I mean, it doesn't seem like Tiger's going to make a comeback that we'd like to see. I mean, everybody would love to see Tiger play well again, but we've got so many great young players in the game. What do you see of the future, and who are the players that you enjoy watching today?
Well, the game is in a good place right now. I think certainly professional golf fans are embracing what's going on right now. Tiger, no doubt, it was the Tiger era, no question about it. What he did will never be repeated in the time frame that he played. And but now it's a kind of a new day, a new era, and you know from Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, McIlroy, Spieth, and I saw Adam Scott out there, and I said, golly, he's kind of the old man of the group now,
one of the older statesmen, and he's only 32.
Justin Thomas, there are so many, Gary Woodland, there's so many unbelievable players right now that you can't help but kind of fall in love with what's happening on the PGA Tour or the World Tour.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it has become truly a world tour. Yeah. Yeah. When you look at all, you know, the John Rahms and all the Henrik Stensons and all the great European players playing the game and playing our tour and with the World Golf Championships and stuff.
No doubt.
You made it.
Well, Bill,
it's just one of your kids.
I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today. And
thank you, Chris.
You have any after day one here? You have any predictions of what's going to happen the rest of the
year? Yeah, I really don't, but I do know that, you always want to play a great round, and certainly the Charlie Hoffman, but, you would probably more look at, you know, kind of how the thing is stacked, and I don't believe that anybody that shot 74, maybe even 75, I still don't believe that they would be out of it. I remember back many years ago, Curtis Strain shot 80. The first round.
That's right.
And I think I remember kind of tough conditions, but then on Sunday he had a 5-shot lead going into the back nine.
Yeah.
So anything can happen at this golf course. We know that for a fact.
No question. It generally, anybody who makes the cut has a chance of winning the tournament.
Yeah, some crazy stuff can happen at Augusta National, the Masters.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show.
You bet, Chris. Loved you.
Thank you, Bill. That was 1981 British Open champion Bill Rogers.
That was Chris's conversation with 1981 British Open champion Bill Rogers. In 1981, Bill finished 4 under par to win the British Open, his only major. He did finish second in the U.S. Open that same year and won Player of the Year honors. Quite modest, didn't really talk about it much. But yeah, the 1981 winner of the Open Championship, he was the only player under par. He beat Bernard Langer by 4 shots. That was Chris's interview with Bill Rogers. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ, The Fan, and streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com. Thanks to our sponsors, Mills GM and Mills Ford this month, and also now available at Podcast One and most places where you can find podcasts. So just look under Lakes, Woods, and Irons. Chris Foley with me from the practice range this morning. And Chris, middle of the British Open, and there's been a lot of talk about the different style of play, of course, at the British Open, and you were recently out in Wisconsin at kind of a different style of play, the dunes-type courses. This country loves to build the Scottish-style golf courses once in a while, but it's a little bit different game, isn't it, from a teaching and playing point of view?
Yeah, you know, I was during the break there, Mac, I was just looking at my calendar, and 75 days from now, I'm on my way over to Scotland for a couple weeks.
Oh boy, nice!
I am I am fired up. And, you know, talking about that, you know, America really doesn't have, they have very few true links courses. You know, we've got some in the northeast part of the U.S., so, you know, out on Long Island and Massachusetts and Rhode Island, there's some great links golf courses. And then on the West Coast, you know, you get a golf course like Pebble Beach that is linksy, but it's truly not a links golf course, even though it's on the ocean. Probably the closest thing on the West Coast would be Bandon Dunes.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, when you go to Scotland and Ireland, that's where you really see true links golf courses. And the definition of links is that the land that links the sea and the, or the yeah the land that links the sea to the land. And why there are so many golf courses on those pieces of land is that, you know, back 100-150 years ago, farmers could not use that land for farming.
Sure.
And it would be more for, they'd graze sheep on it, they'd graze cattle on it, those type of things. But it became, as golf came into prominence, it became the perfect site for those golf courses. And thankfully it did, because it's truly the best golf in the world, in my opinion. And you know, what we see is, we're watching golf, you know, watching TV this weekend, is, you know, generally Portrush, the golf courses in Ireland are not as firm generally as what you see in Scotland, but the golf courses, they're very dunesy. They're all built on sand. Because they're next to the ocean or the sea, the wind blows much harder than it typically does in the States. And so it calls for somewhat a little different style of play. And, you know, if you remember last year at Carnoustie, where it was so firm and fast, the players were hitting a lot more, you know, irons off the tee, you know, driving irons, three irons off the tee, where they would flight the ball down and it would roll out forever and it wouldn't get up in the wind. And we're seeing a little bit of that this week. You know, it's not nearly as firm as and fast, but you know, because of the wind, players tend to flight the ball down a lot more. They hit a lot more punch shots in the greens. And the, you know, with the fescue and tall rough, it adds a different element that we generally don't see from week to week on the PGA Tour, but we may see in a, you know, a major championship like the U.S. Open.
Sure, it's a interesting style of play. It's taken real thinkers over the years, thinkers and great players. Like most majors, it's, you know, you start to look at the past winners, and it's always great players. The British, the great Peter Thomson, I think, won the British Open five times. Then the '60s, here came. Arnie revitalized things in the Open Championship by coming from America and winning it a couple of times. At the time, the greatest player in the world. Then he brought Nicklaus, Player along. Of course, Player had played in it before. Then Watson, just the names are amazing. Tiger, even Greg Norman just was stellar in that tournament, won a couple of times. Yeah. Guys that really think it through. Watson, probably the premier example of a guy 60 years old that almost won the British Open.
Yeah, I think it tends to be much more, you know, much more shot makers type of golf courses, where guys who visualize, you know, so well. And one of my favorite aspects about links golf is how the ball moves on the ground. And, you know, you have all these undulation and slope and around the greens, and where, you know, you don't, to get it to the pin, you may have to aim, you know, 20, 30, 40 yards right or left and let the slope of the ground take the ball of the hole. And to me, that's just such a great aspect of the game of golf, and something you really don't see on the PGA Tour from week to week. But when you get on this links golf, you see a lot of that. To me, that's one of the joys of golf, is watching that ball, you know, run along the ground and seek the low point, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I've been thinking about since our guest a week or two back, balance in the golf swing, Chris. We've talked about that, but you've kind of got some cool drills that when you're teaching, you can use. Also, a question from the tee, which could just as well be me asking it. You hit a couple of good shots on the golf course. And then you stray a little bit, and you can't seem to get back to that swing where you feel like you're kind of dialed, even if it's 3-4 holes, whatever it might be. Then you lose it, and then you can't get it back.
Yeah, you know, that's so common, and I think that everybody fights that. And really what happens is, you know, when you're working on your golf game, you need to come to the realization that we don't make a lot of different swings. We make the same. Our swings are very consistent. It's just that our ball flight is inconsistent based on timing. So generally, the same swing error generally causes 3 to 5 misses. And if we have that realization of what our errors are and what our misses are, and you just have to go back to whatever your key thoughts are for, you know, to correct that swing, so to speak, or more make it more efficient. And what happens, you're on the golf course, and let's say you're going along, and all of a sudden you hit a shot way to the right. And generally most people will go, on their very next shot, they're thinking, I've got to correct that shot to the right. Now all of a sudden they hit one way left, and the next shot's a correction for the last shot, and that process continues. So all of a sudden you go down this rabbit hole where you get totally away from what you are working on in your golf swing, and you're in this process of correcting every shot, which you don't have to do.
Yeah.
And now you can't get back to center or balance. And the players who have an understanding of their misses tend not to do that. But when we're correcting every swing, which we don't have to do, you just have to go back to, you know, what makes the swing efficient, then we tend to stay much more on track from shot to shot and from day to day.
Yeah, I think that's a great danger. Even the greatest players in the world sometimes start to, you wonder where a guy went, and you think, he kept tweaking and tweaking and tweaking to try to be perfect instead of just pretty darn good all the time.
Yeah,
and so you start, I think we all start terrible, and then maybe we work our way up to bad, and then then the swing's okay, and the game's pretty good, then maybe it's really good, and then you have at some point in time, you know, how many times, you know, you can say that's the best 8-iron I've ever hit. Well,
right.
Chances are you're
right.
Not doing that again, but you want to stay at least good and pretty good as much as you can.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Understanding your misses, that is what the pros do better than anybody else, I think.
Well, yeah, if you have an understanding of why the golf ball, for you, why the golf ball goes where it does, boy, it's so much easier to self-correct on the golf course and stay on track, because, you know, it doesn't matter what level you're at, whether, you know, it's Rory McIlroy this weekend or Tiger this weekend, or you and I playing a four-ball match at the Legacy.
Yeah.
Everybody hits bad shots. And, you know, the player that wins the Open Championship this weekend is not going to be the player that hits the greatest shots. It's going to be the player who has the best miss hits and makes the most putts.
Yeah. All right, Chris, good segment. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mac.
By next week, we'll know the British Open winner, and we want to thank – it was kind of fun to replay your interview with Bill Rogers, which is so good, and we thought that would work out nicely. The 1981 champ was nice enough to join you at Augusta, and so a replay of that this week since it's the British Open, and he won back in 1981. So
yeah, one of the great gentlemen in the game of golf, and just such a wealth of knowledge and great stories.
All right, thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Mac.
That is Chris Foley. I'm Mac. You've been listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan. Today's broadcast is sponsored by Craigan's Legacy Courses, Tito's Handmade Vodka, Rutgers Bay Lake Lodge, The Tea Hive, The Holiday Station on Mill Avenue, and Maury's Market. Streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com, sponsored by Mills GM. We now return to our regularly scheduled program at the Lake Sports Talk, 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.